Good to be together. I stood at the back for a little bit while we were singing and just looked around and was very grateful for you. Grateful to be part of this family, grateful to be part of what God's doing in our midst. And so I have a friend who is a fairly famous writer. His name's Bob Logan. And Bob wrote a whole bunch of church planting type books and leadership type books. And Bob was, I was with him probably a year and a bit ago, and Bob told a story. He said, Cam, I get to go preach at a whole bunch of different churches. And it's always, always, always easier to go preach at other churches than it is to preach at your own. And so he said, I was looking forward to this, and I went, and I preached one of my best sermons, I worked hard on it, and at the end of the sermon, somebody comes racing up to me, he says, and I'm standing there, and the guy comes up and he goes, oh, Bob. Now that was a great, great sermon. That was really good. We don't get preaching like that at our church. I mean, we rarely, rarely hear good preaching like we just heard out of you. Now he's a little embarrassed when he's hearing this, right? He's hopefully the regular preacher guy. He's not that close to listening. But Bob looks at the guy and he says, I'm amazed. I'm amazed that you've been able to tell me that. Thank you so much. The guy says, well, you preached well today, and it's good, and I'm really grateful for it. And Bob said, I'm astounded. How long have you been a Christian? The guy says, 25 years, and all those 25 years, I've hardly heard preaching like that. That was so good. 25 years, huh? Well, I am just amazed. I'm amazed that after 25 years, you can come and tell me that. So the guy says, I'm thinking of leaving our church. Bob said, well, why is that? Well, we just don't get good preaching like this, and I need to go somewhere where I can be fed, I can be fed regularly from the Word each week. And Bob said, amazing. After 25 years, you have the guts to tell me that you still need to be fed and you can't feed yourself. Oops. The guy was embarrassed, right? But friends, this is a disease that I think so many Christians have. Dan was telling me this week about some movie clips that he'd seen or some research he'd done. There's a lot of seriously concerning diseases where little kids can't grow up. They age, but they don't grow properly. And of course, we know this from one of the movies that we've all seen, the Peter Pan movie, The Lost Boys, right? Here are the Lost Boys who refuse to grow up. Same thing with that video clip that we just watched and failure to launch. But friends, I think this is one of the biggest problems of the church. Our growth is stunted. We have the disease of remaining, of maybe growing older, but not growing more mature or growing up. We come to 1 Peter chapter 5, and I think one of the things that we need to begin to understand is that we have the wrong picture of what leadership is all about. I know what happens. We saw in the program, this is about everyday leadership. Oh, well, good, I'm not a leader, so I can tune out for the next 25 minutes. We got the wrong picture of what it means to be a leader. We've been bombarded with all these ideas that being a leader means I can be a CEO of a company, or there's a business model of what leadership is all about. Frankly, that's so backwards. It's not about a leadership model, a business model at all. It's about, rather, a picture of what it means to be part of a family. A friend of mine made this quote. He said, I'm absolutely convinced that 100 years from now, many books will be written on the phenomenon that is the late 20th century, early 21st century American church. I'm fairly certain that people in reading about it will say to each other, you got to be kidding. Seriously? People actually thought it was a good idea to structure the church as if it were a business? Honestly? Because friends, that's what we've done. We've painted this idea that leadership is all about having the skills or having the capabilities like leading a business. And Peter comes to us in this text and he begins to say, no, this is completely a different picture of what leadership is all about. And the biggest problem is, he says, we haven't grown up. We had a big week in our family this week. One of those monumental, life-changing weeks in our family. It was the week in which the son becomes stronger than the father. I've been fearing this for about the last 6 months. Every time Shelley would encourage Matthew and I to go wrestle, I would immediately sort of puff up my chest and sort of come on aggressively in terms of my voice, and Matthew would always kind of back up a little bit. This week he didn't back up. And we wrestled. And I wasn't going to win. But it's supposed to be that way. Our kids are born, and for the first number of years we care for them, we feed them, we change their diapers, we do everything we can for them because they can't do anything for themselves. And then they grow up a little bit, and what do? We teach them to feed themselves, we teach them to care for themselves, to take care of all the needs that they need to do. And then they become even bigger, and what begins to happen is you begin to see this transition happening. That's part of life, that's the picture. That's supposed to happen. It's supposed to happen in the church also. Leadership is not for the super gifted, but it's for those who have said, I am a new creation. I have been born again. I've been born into Jesus' family. And what happens is, instead of us saying, well, I'm a gifted leader in the business world, therefore I should be a gifted leader in the church, it's completely the opposite. Leadership in the church is for those that have decided to follow Jesus. And as we follow Jesus and grow up in our faith, as we become mature in our faith, others follow us. The problem is, if we never grow up, we never mature, nobody ever starts to follow us. Well, Peter has so many things that he wants to tell us here in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 to 4. Let me read it again. Rick read it a little earlier, but let me just refresh our memories. Chapter 5, verse 1 to 4, and I'll make a few comments about what Peter's saying about this maturing process for all of us. To the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder and a witness of Christ's sufferings, who also will share in the glory to be revealed. Be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, watching over them, not because you must, but because you're willing, as God wants you to be, not pursuing dishonest gain, but eager to serve, not lording it over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that will never fade away. Friends, leadership is for every single one of us. Leadership, the way that Peter describes it here in this text, is not for the elite. It's for every single person who claims and calls themselves a Christ follower. What does he say? Well, he says, some of you don't consider yourself to be leaders or don't want to grow up to be a leader because you know how discouraging it could be. He says, I want you to be encouraged. He says it right there in verse 1, to the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder. He gets it. He understands. He knows the pain, the disappointment, the distractions, the loneliness, the stress, the frustration at times at leading other people. He knows that. My dad always said it this way. He said, you know, boy, being a leader in a church is kind of tough. It would be a lot easier if everybody were just dogs instead of people. Dogs are just so much easier because they just love you no matter what happens. People are difficult sometimes. We're all difficult. And it's hard sometimes to lead another person, whether it's one person, 10 people, 100 people, doesn't matter. There's ups and downs. There's disappointment. You disciple with somebody for a year, for 2 years. You begin to see them grow in their faith, and then they make stupid decisions that cause them to go way far back away from the Lord again. Peter says, be encouraged. I get it. You're not crazy, he says, for being a leader. I know you need encouragement, and we all need encouragement. I think there are sometimes people say, I'm not going to be a leader because it's so discouraging. We need that encouragement, and that's what Peter's doing here in identifying, saying, I appeal also as a fellow elder. I know what you're going through, and let me encourage you. Is written in his comments. There's nothing more important than being used by God to build his kingdom, to build his church. And Peter comes along and says, I get it. But not only when he says, I appeal, is he saying, you're not crazy for leading. He's saying, you're commissioned. You're commissioned. He says, I get it. I know. Remember the time when he was standing there on the beach. We've talked about this the last few weeks. And Jesus came along to him and said, you're no longer going to fish for fish, you're going to fish for men. And then later, as Peter began to grow up in his faith, Jesus said, Peter, on this rock I will build my church. And Christ commissioned him. It was never about talent for Peter. It was about the call of Jesus on his life. I mean, Peter wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer. He grew up in a family. He didn't get asked to be a student of a rabbi. Instead, he was just going to take up the family business of being a fisherman. And for a Jewish boy, that was okay, but it was not the be-all and end-all. It wasn't sort of top place in the church or in the synagogue in those days. But then Christ came, and Christ saw something in him that others hadn't seen. So Joanne's not here today, and I wish she was, because I'd love her to hear this, but maybe she'll hear it on the tape at some point. When we started Southside, I recognized something in Joanne. Something that was about what I think Christ saw in Peter and the rest of the disciples. This obedience, this willingness to follow. Joanne went kicking and screaming into a leadership position in our church. But those of us that know Joanne so well, we know how much God has set her apart to be a leader. Not because she's this brilliant leader that can go lead in a big company. That's not it. Not because she can be a CEO and do real well in business. But because she's faithful and obedient to Jesus. And that's what it was with Peter. A willingness. Christ saw something in him. And he said, therefore, I'm going to use you. Friends, that's the same with each one of us. We don't have to be these brilliant CEOs. But rather faithful and obedient to what Jesus is calling us to do. Peter says you're commissioned and you're connected. You're part of a long line of people that Christ has called to lead. Is it difficult? Yes. Will you be disappointed? Absolutely. But then Peter, who understands all of that, says it's not really that bad. You should try prison or death by inverted crucifixion because that's what he went through. Friends, it's discouraging at times when you're working with people and then all of a sudden they seem to take these great big steps back. I get that. But it's nothing compared to what Peter went through. And he says, I get it in verse 1. You're not crazy, but rather you're commissioned. Understand and begin to see yourself as a leader in Christ's family. Then in verse 2, he says this. He says, be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, watching over them. Be shepherds. Peter understood this. And what is he doing here in verse 2? He's giving the job description of a leader. It's Peter, the same guy who stood in the courtyard and the girl came up to him and said, weren't you with Jesus? Nope, didn't know him. Another one, yes you were. I can tell by your accent that you were with Jesus. Nope, didn't understand. Three times. Peter denies Jesus, and on the third time, you remember the rooster crowed, right? The rooster did his cock-a-doodle-doo thing. And what ends up happening is Christ turns and looks at Peter, and Peter feels so ashamed. I failed. There they are a number of days later. Christ is risen, and they meet again on the beach. Once again, Peter jumps out of the boat, and he gets to shore. And Jesus looks at Peter, and do you remember what he says? Peter, do you love me? Feed my sheep. Take care of my lambs. Three times. Why three times? Because he restored him. It's Peter. Peter who understands that Jesus has called him to feed his sheep. So what does he say to us? Be shepherds as Christ has called you to grow up in your faith and to lead. So he's called you to lead by being a shepherd, not by being a creative CEO, but by being a shepherd. Can't help but think that Peter must have had Psalm 23, which was so important for the Jews, so important for us, ringing in his ears. How do you lead? How do you shepherd? How do you do that well? And he would have these images of a shepherd with a staff and a rod, both things. The staff to care for the people, to lead the people, to guide the people, to keep them safe in times of trouble. The rod to discipline, to get their attention, to say hard things. Oh, how many times we don't want to lead because it means we have to say the hard things. Think of your family. You're raising your kids. You want to do everything you can with the staff to care for them and to encourage them and to keep them safe and to protect them and to feed them and to lead them and to guide them in the ways they should go. And then come those times when there's the rod where we have to discipline. We have to discipline because of the reality that says, I love my kids enough that I'm willing to do the hard stuff. What happens if we don't discipline our kids? We don't discipline our kids sometimes because we love ourselves more than we love them. We don't like the feeling. But when we really love our kids and we want to see them grow up, we have both of those things. And that's what Peter's saying to you and I. Lead, grow up, be leaders. And as you go through this natural progression of being born again and then taking the next generation and becoming, creating family again, He says, lead with both the staff and the rod. Third thing, come with me to verse 3. He says this, it's the end of verse 2. He says, watching over them, not because you must, but because you are willing. Peter says, be a leader, not because you must and it's a requirement, but because instead you're willing. In other words, what attitude should we lead with? Not because we must. Not because it's a duty. Not because they were short on people to lead in the church. Nothing to do with that. Instead, it's because we're willing. I remember a number of Olympics ago. Some of you may remember these names. Remember the name Nancy Drolet? Nancy Drolet was a Canadian ice hockey player, a female, obviously. And she did so much work to get the Canadian ice hockey team, the women's team, into Olympic status. She worked and worked and worked and played for the Canadian national team for 12 years. And about 2 months before the Olympics, the first Olympics that the women were going to play in, she got cut from the team because she was too old. The pain, to hear the pain of this woman who had spent 12 years with the national team trying to help them get to this point and just before the finish line gets cut. Well, that same year there was a goalie on the men's team by the name of Patrick Waugh. Some of you remember that name. And Patrick actually said, I don't want to play for the team, even though the team needs me. I don't want to play for the team because I'm too tired. I'm too busy. I don't really want to. It's not that big of a deal in my life. And I looked at those two pictures of Nancy Drolet, who had poured everything she had, not for big sums of money, but just because she loved the game and loved Canada, poured everything she had into that and then gets cut. And on the other hand, Patrick Waugh, making millions of dollars, but has an arrogant attitude that says, well, I don't really need to do this because I'm my own boss. That's what Peter's talking about here. Don't lead because you have to. Lead because you get to. Lead because that's what happens when people grow up in their faith. That's what happens when they respond to Jesus. That's what happens when we follow Jesus. He crafts us into being shepherds, leaders of others. Peter says, eager to serve. Not because you have to, but because you're willing. Eager. Eager to do it. It's not about money. Instead, it's a privilege. It's not about money, because if you want to make a whole lot of money, you don't go into different kinds of leadership and church stuff. If you want to make a whole bunch of money, he says, go do something else. Instead, this is all about the privilege and the spiritual benefits that come when we begin to see others grow up in their faith. Friends, if you're asking the question of what do I get out of it, you've already failed on this one. I got to stop there for a minute. I'm pretty concerned at Southside that there are lots of people that should be spiritually mature enough now. Should be spiritually mature enough to lead, but I think we're stuck on asking the question of what do I get out of it? That's what Peter's saying here. Don't ask that question. That's not the point. The point is, what do I get to give? What do I get to bring? Lord, what have you done in me that you can use for your kingdom's sake? And it's not just about a casual work ethic here, he says. It's about a high work ethic. What will I put into it? Well, let me come down to verse 3 and the fourth point. Two more and then we'll quit. He says in verse 3, here's how you lead. Not lording it over those entrusted to you, but instead being examples to the flock. So he says, you should be a shepherd, you should be willing, and now you need to lead, or you need to do this being a shepherd by being an example. So many people come to me at times and they say, Cam, you know, when we want to lead, what kind of skills or strategies do we need? Here's really the skills and strategy you need. You ready? Follow Jesus and be an example of Jesus to other people. There it is. That's all Peter says. That's the crux of the matter right there. Don't lord it over them. What's that mean? It means this. When you're called to be a shepherd, it means that you will follow Jesus. And as you follow Jesus, other people will follow you. When you get a business or CEO mentality in your mind, what you do is you think, I'm in charge and I'm responsible for seeing change in the organization and change in people. It's not my job to change you. It's my job to follow Jesus. And as I do that, I hope that you will see Jesus in me and decide to follow. For the minute that I think that my job is to change you, Mark, I'll start behaving in a way that lords it over you. You'll frustrate me because you'll do this instead of me wanting you to do that. And that happens with all of us.
Peter says, here's how you do it. You don't lord it over them. Instead, you be an example. You see, most of the job of being a good shepherd or a good leader is self-leadership. Lord, do I love you with all my heart? Do I love you with all my mind? Do I love you with all my strength? Do I love you with everything that I've got? And the other part of it is, instead of it being about all kinds of skills or techniques or strategies, instead of being a seller, a teller, or a coach, or any other kind of big list that we can come up with, Peter says, being a leader, how does he say it here? Being examples of the flock. It's about eager to serve. One of the hardest things that I've ever done in leadership is I had to let somebody go from our staff team. Remember it like yesterday. It was a long time ago. It's probably almost 12 years ago now. Many of you remember Marcia. And having to let Marcia go from our staff team was a very difficult thing. She was my friend as well as co-worker. I remember something that happened about 6 to 9 months after we'd stopped working together. A whole bunch of people held a staff appreciation night here. We had tables set up here, and they'd put on just a wonderful, wonderful meal for us, and even had some entertainment for us, and a speaker that came in, and they just absolutely told us we were worth $1 million. And people from the church came to serve us. Guess who served me? Marcia did. It's hard now. But when Marcia came and poured me tea, and offered me different parts of the meal and served me, it's a greater example of leadership than anything I've ever done. That's what Peter's saying. When you grow up in your faith, you're called to be a leader. This isn't just for some elite. This is for every one of us. Be willing, not because you have to, but because you get to. And how are you supposed to do it? You're supposed to be an example. Serve one another. Pay attention to your own faith. Pay attention to the way that you're following Jesus, and others will follow you. Serve them. And then he says in verse 4, for when the chief shepherd returns, when he appears, you will receive the crown of glory. Guys, this isn't about leadership getting benefits right here and now all the time, although there are some. The right here and now, you know what they are? Oh, I can't tell you what it's like to have front row seats when you watch God at work in people's lives. Even little tiny bits of growth you see. Great, great joy. But that's not even why we do it. We do it because we believe that He's called us to. And that one day we will receive benefit. We will receive that crown of glory for being obedient. I had some meetings in Toronto this last week, and one of the guys that was there who was speaking said this. He'd been with some Chinese leaders, and the Chinese had said to the Caucasians, tell me about your discipleship plans. And the Caucasian leaders had gone down all these big long lists. Here's how we disciple people. Here's how we see them grow up in their faith. Here's how we see leadership development happen. Here's how we... all these big long lists. And then the Caucasians turned to the Chinese and they said, well, how do you do it? And they said, oh, we have quite a different plan. It's usually a little bit more simple. We read or hear the word of God and then we obey it. Friends, we lead because God tells us to. We lead because it's the natural thing that when we're born into God's family and we raise up, there comes a point in time when we stop being kids and we start being adults. That's what leadership in the New Testament is all about. I am concerned that in our generation, and this includes us at Southside, so let's just even talk Southside for the minute. I'm concerned that we don't remain lost boys for the next generation. That we understand that as we have milk and then meat, that we then become adults or leaders and care for others. I'm concerned that we don't get the picture that we must be these incredible CEO-gifted people in order to be a leader. No, the prerequisite is that we follow Jesus. And as we follow Him, others will follow us. I'm concerned that so many have stayed on the sidelines because they're asking the question of what do I get out of it? Instead of saying, oh Lord, how can I hear Your call and obey?